not going to pretend to know what you're going through, but I can tell you that I know how a lot of you feel. I grew up without my dad, not knowing when I was going to eat next, sometimes being homeless, and getting teased about being poor. I know how helpless and sad and frustrating and angry that can make a person, and I know that it's hard to live like that. I also now know that it's possible to grow beyond helpless and sad and frustrated and angry, and I'll try to share how I did it.
Hello, and welcome to Letters from the Lunchroom, a podcast by Communities and Schools of Mid-America. I'm your host, Victoria Partridge. Communities and Schools is a nationwide nonprofit which connects students and their families to local resources in order to remove barriers so that they will have greater success in school and in life. During this podcast, we talk to people who have a relationship with our organization. From students to staff members and alumni to volunteers, we know that people who connect with nonprofits have a story that led them there, and we want to know that story. Today's guest is a first for this podcast. Today, we are talking to one of our board members. I've had the pleasure of working with Alex on a few small projects. We've sat in on meetings together, hashed through some ideas, and done a couple of marketing things. But to be honest, I really don't know much about him. Well, that is all going to change today. The word on the street is that Alex has a story to tell that leads him to joining CIS of Mid-America's Board of Directors. Stay tuned as we welcome Alex Delaney of Lawrence, Kansas to the podcast. Okay, so hello, welcome to the lunchroom, Alex. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Although, as we talked a little bit earlier, it sounds like my day is a little less busy than yours.
My days are always hectic. I do it to myself. If I don't keep myself busy, then I get myself in trouble.
You know what? That's fair enough. So quick question at the start of the podcast. Have you ever been on a podcast before?
I have a number of times, actually.
Oh, really? So you're a pro?
I'm not a pro. I'm sure you will quickly find out.
Excellent. So what has been like your favorite podcast that you've been on? I might have to go check it out.
Oh, they're all product. They're all pretty boring product podcasts. But, you know, I'm pretty new media. I've just actually recently had an experience where I read a paragraph about a Fortnite gamer and I literally didn't understand anything in the paragraph. So I've finally gotten to the point now where I feel like I'm too old for stuff, but I'm pretty new media. And I like, you know, I listen to not a lot of podcasts, but I listen to audiobooks constantly in the car. So I'm a big listener.
Yes, same. I love the audiobooks. Although since podcasting is relatively new to me because I just started listening to podcasts about a year ago, I'm definitely on that still like binging side. And I found a podcast that I fell in love with that has a lot of archived episodes. So I've just really been kind of going ham on it.
It's all about the binge.
It really is. So to get started with this podcast, I know you said that you've listened to these episodes before, so you understand the format that we do here. So we're just going to jump right in then. So we're talking to you because you're on our board of directors. And as we know, and as you know, people do not typically connect with nonprofit organizations unless there's some greater reason. They're not doing it for the money. They're not doing it for the glory. They're doing it for something that's more meaningful. So that's kind of what I want to get to with you, is to determine what it was that brought you to connect with communities and schools. So let's start at the beginning. And do you remember when your relationship with this organization first started?
CIS came pretty highly recommended to me. And to be honest, I'd never heard of communities and schools before. A fellow board member, Larissa Long, reached out to me through a mutual friend as they were looking for board members and told me a little bit about the organization. My friend Stanley Rasmussen said that he thought it would be a good fit for me. I'm on a number of boards and they all kind of revolve around poverty and education. I'm sure we'll get into this later, but I was one of the kids who would have been in the program. I grew up very poor and I had number of problems and opportunities, but that's something that means a lot to me. All the boards that I serve on have something to do with education and addressing poverty with education as a resolution for it.
Oh, wow. And something that you said at the very beginning is something that actually resonates really strongly with me, because whenever I first met Communities in Schools, I was looking for a job and I saw this job posting, and I'd never heard of the organization either, but I really loved what the job itself entailed. And then whenever I started looking into the organization, I started really getting into it. And now I've been with the organization for about 4 years, and I'm just incredibly passionate about what we do. The people that we work with, both inside and outside the organization, are really amazing.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think that that's something that you and I could probably agree with. As you just said, I agree. But like, we will see other staff members and board members and volunteers who maybe didn't hear of Communities in Schools, but then once they do and they start connecting with us, they really start to fall in love with the organization, which I love. So one of these days, we're going to talk to somebody and we're going to say, oh yeah, we work with Communities in Schools. And they'll be like, oh yeah, I've totally heard of them. They're in this amazing organization.
Yeah, and I think that's good. And I think that both the national organization and certainly Mid-America and you yourself specifically are doing a great job of raising the profile. But I think really the core thing to me that sticks out is the incredible amount of quality product that they bring to classrooms, and the results that they achieve. It's incredibly impressive. I've got quite a bit of history in the nonprofit world, serving on different boards and volunteering. And I've just never been failed to come away impressed from a board meeting or any meeting with staff. And a lot of that has to go out to Melissa and Kelly and all the staff, and being well prepared and executing well on the mission. So I think you guys are certainly the ones who deserve all the credit. And it's impressive to me every single time that I go to a board meeting.
Well, thank you. You mentioned, though, that you are on a lot of boards. And so one of the things that I did in preparation for this episode was I went and I peeked at your LinkedIn account. And
you Googled me.
I did. I Googled you. We really haven't, dove deep into talking about things, other than just kind of like at board meetings and stuff. So yeah. I went and I saw that you really are. I mean, you have a lot of boards that you are involved with and that you have been involved with for a very long time. And so between the boards that you're involved with, including Communities and Schools, and then what you do for your professional life, because I know that, and I don't know 100% what all your involvement is with Equinox and Solstice, but I know that you are highly involved, and feel free to expand upon it because I would love to hear more. But I know that one piece of that business is the Wear One, Share One.
Yeah.
And so,
Equinox and Solstice was an idea that I had from CIS and some of the meetings that we sat in on, and some of the needs that not only kids that CIS serves, but CIS itself has. A lot of people don't realize that the nonprofits' missions drive them to spend resource dollars on serving kids. And, when I realized how much money was coming out of the CIS budget to help feed kids and clothe kids, I thought, well, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be a way to serve the nonprofit and the kids and kind of bring everything together. So I came up with Equinox and Solstice. It's an outdoor apparel company. I grew up in Montana, and so I'm a big outdoor guy. And, I was, you probably didn't know this, but I was homeless for a year after college. And because of my background in backpacking, I was probably the best outfitted homeless guy you'd ever seen in your life. But, if you're going to have one pair of pants, or you're going to have one coat, it's got to be really durable. It's got to be really versatile. And that's the same thing that the kids are going through, that backpackers go through on the trail all the time. So I thought it was a great fit. One of my favorite parts about the company is that we partner with nonprofits nationwide, including Communities and Schools all across the country. And when we sell a product, we work with those nonprofits to identify a kid who needs that product, and then we make sure that we get it to them. And not only do we give them the product, but we give them a gift card so they get to go on our website and pick out whatever size and color they want. and then it gets shipped to their door. So they're getting an e-commerce experience out of it too. And a lot of these kids won't have, an e-commerce experience when they're growing up. And it's going to be such a huge part of their lives as they get older that it's important that they're exposed to it at a young age.
So if somebody wanted to go and check out this site and learn more about this program, where would they go?
Yeah, they'd go to equinox-solstice.com. It's all about the changing of the seasons. And we want to remind the kids that everything changes. So they might be in a tough spot right now. Might be winter where they are, but as they get older, it'll turn into spring and warm up into summer.
Perfect. So your business, you do a lot of giving. In your, I don't know what you would call it, not necessarily business, but not necessarily personal life. You do a lot of giving with your boards that you're on. So whatever that blend is of the two, personal and professional. And then you also, because I definitely want to talk to you about transitions.
Transformations.
Oh yes, transformations. Yeah. Thank you. Transformations.
I do. And actually something that's probably that you didn't find on my LinkedIn is I also coach soccer when I'm not doing anything else. It seems like I'm always doing something, but like I said, I like to fill up my time. Transformations is a great event. And I hope that it expands beyond Lawrence, but, Brandon Eisman does a great job putting on a really entertaining evening. It's a beauty pageant, where men in the community dress and drag and compete. And it is a competition of, to win the beauty pageant. And then the winner is awarded $10,000 for the charity of their choice. Now, every charity represented gets some money, but these guys are talented. Mm-hmm. And we go all out, ball gowns, you shave the appropriate areas, you have to walk on heels, so you got to get used to those for 3 months. It's a commitment, but it's totally worthwhile, especially, Communities and Schools is the organization that I'm representing, and I'm taking that pretty seriously. It means a lot to me to be on the board and to help these kids out in the 5 states that we serve. So, I'm gearing up. I'm working on it pretty hard actually. And from what I've seen in the past, I'm going to have to, because the competition is pretty stiff.
Well, I've got my ticket, so you better be good.
no
do you
pressure,
have any more tickets
no
left? I know some other people were asking.
I don't know. They sold out in like 3 days, and I think that's great. Yes. Lawrence is one of the places, and I love Kansas. I didn't grow up in Kansas, and I really think that it's home now. Mm-hmm. And Kansas is a really special place, but Lawrence specifically is, I think, one of the few places that embraces something like this. Mm-hmm. in the community. And I think that's pretty amazing. I've traveled a lot, and I don't know of too many places that would so openly welcome a drag queen beauty pageant in a red state and have it support charity. I just think it's an amazing thing.
And true it is. And I can't wait to see it. So we've kind of talked about more of your present. You've kind of alluded to your past. So presently you are this man that does a lot of giving. You're obviously very passionate about helping kids, helping people who are maybe considered to be underdogs. So let's then go into your past. You've talked about that you grew up homeless. Would you mind sharing some about that? Because I suspect that experience is a big part of what brings you to be so passionate about helping people now as an adult.
Yeah, I know one of the questions you ask is how weird would you rate yourself? And I don't know. I don't think that I'm that weird, but everybody else tells me that I am. I don't think of my experiences as shaping them intellectually. Obviously, I know that that's what happens, but that was just life, and that was just normal for me. And then as I got older, I started to realize that it wasn't normal for everybody else. And I think that's when my life really changed. We moved around a lot when I was a kid. My mom was, she had a really tough childhood herself. And so I don't think that she knew any better. It's the same cycle of poverty that we talk about all the time. And so we moved around a lot. My mom didn't have much of an education. She didn't have, a safety net when she was a parent. And it's what we see a lot of kids going through, having kids young. And that's kind of the way that I was raised. And so there were times where, we didn't have any food, and there were times where we didn't have anywhere to stay. And I don't think that we ever had Thanksgiving with the family, Christmas is with nothing or next to nothing. And it's the same story that you hear over and over again. And I don't think that I'm special because of it or anything. you know, she did the best that she could with the limited resources that she had. When I grew up and I realized that it wasn't the same experience that everybody else had, I wanted more, and I made it so I could figure out how to be independent. And, you know, I thought about that earlier as I was writing the letter that you asked for. It really is kind of personally declaring independence from, you know, poverty, but also independence from having to get, you know, welfare and food stamps, and independent of going to the food bank for your meals. And, you know, that's one of the most frustrating things about living in poverty is the lack of independence, and everybody wants to have freedom and independence. So mm-hmm. I think that's the thing, that if there's something that I really learned, if there's something I can give the kids that I help out through CIS or any of the nonprofits I work for, soccer or anything, it's, or, you know, even adults, is that feeling of independence, of being able to decide their own future. And that's the thing that I try to work for the most. That's why education is a big part of everything that I do, because education, I believe, is the gateway to freedom and independence. And so those two things have always kind of surrounded my life. I found it for myself. And now that I feel like I'm independent, I feel like it's my responsibility as a citizen of the world to help other people feel the same way.
So I'm really kind of stunned over here, because I've never had anybody talk so openly about how dependent a person has to become once they are in sort of the throes of poverty. And I don't think that people who haven't really experienced poverty understand what it's like to have your entire life dependent on getting your food from other people, getting your transportation from other people, relying on this or that for these basic utilities, basic needs that the rest of the world takes for granted. And so if you have an adult who is dealing with those sorts of experiences, that's one thing. You know, that's an adult, and it is hard, and I'm not going to diminish how tough it is. But to then be a child who is growing and who is developing, and to be going through those sorts of things at the same time that you are also learning about yourself and learning about your peers and about the world, that's crushing to me, to have that kind of honesty that you were talking about, because you were in school, correct? Like, you were a youth whenever that was happening.
You know, and the other thing that I think about, and the reason that Equinox and Solstice specifically has the mission of helping kids, is it is such an important time, you know, in people's lives, you know, the transition. And I agree with what Rich Prophet said on one of the other podcasts, that middle school is the epitome of the most transitional important time of a person's life. But you know, the thing for me is those kids didn't have a choice. You know, they didn't make any bad decisions that put them there. You know, they didn't do anything wrong that made them suffer. They didn't have a choice of what family they were born into. They just got stuck in a situation based on the choices of other people. And there's a certain, you know, unfairness about that. Everybody's different. Everybody has problems, and I'm not denying that. But I think that it's important that society helps these kids, because if we're going to be able to break the cycle of poverty in a family or in a state or in a country, it's got to start with helping the kids realize that there is another way. This is some people's lives. This doesn't have to be what the rest of their life is like. And I think, like I said, that's what happened with me. I got out there and, you know, through luck and a lot of hard work, I was able to experience a lot of different things, both good and bad. And it helped me realize that there were other options, and there were decisions that I had to make to get out of the cycle. And I think allowing kids some perspective that they're not going to have when they're, you know, 13, 14, 17 years old, it's important if we're going to really solve the problem.
So do you go out and share your story of growing up in poverty and then breaking your own cycle with other kids and people that are going through the same experience?
You know, a little bit. I'm also on the board of directors in Kansas for Junior Achievement, because I'm an entrepreneur. I think entrepreneurship and education really go hand in hand, but I think they're a good way to break out of the cycle. But, you know, I don't feel like I don't feel like I'm special. I'm certainly, and I'll, you know, you'll hear a little bit more about this when I was, when I read my letter, but I'm not an unusual person. I'm unusually attractive. I'll give you that, but I'm not unusually intelligent. I'm not, you know, special in any real way. I'm just dumb enough to work really hard. And I think that when I share my story, I don't think of it as my story. I think of it as, you know, everybody's different. Everybody's going through different things. I'd rather listen than share my story. And I'm perfectly happy to if I'm being asked, but I want it to be about the kids and their story. And I want it to be about what they can do to better their lives. And certainly I want them to see what the end goal is, but I think there are probably better examples of that than me.
Perhaps, but I don't feel like you're giving yourself enough credit because, you know, you were smart enough to realize that there were ways other than how you had been raised, that there were other options in life. So, you know, I mean, like, I think you are a great role model for kids to look at and to say, okay, well, you know, he had a similar experience and I can connect with him that way. But look how he, you know, changed things. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's probably true. Maybe I'm not giving myself enough credit. Yeah. It's hard to take credit for something like that when all I tried to do was navigate, my life. I had a lot of help. I had a lot of really great mentors, growing up to the time that I'm 37 today, I've had a lot of help from mentors and people who care about me to make me into a better person. I did the work, sure, but you know, without those people, there's no way that I get to where I am today. So in as much as I agree that I could share my story and hopefully it would be inspirational to them, I'd rather just be that person that's there for them, willing to take the phone calls whenever they need, you know, giving them, you know, a hand up and helping them work through their problems so they can be better people. It's not about me. It's about how can I help them get through their problems.
And that's like, my mind's over here just going, phew, because that's exactly it. I mean, we see it time and time again that students that are going through the most dire of situations, I mean, yes, it may seem like they need a lot, but the number one thing they need is just someone to step in and care. And so those mentors and those people that you had growing up, I had them too. They make such a profound impact on the lives of our young people. And I love that you brought that up. So thank you so, so much. So one of the questions that I want to ask you before we end kind of the first segment of the podcast episode with you is I would like for you to tell me one of your proudest moments in your life.
Yeah. So, you know, I had to really rack my brain about this. I don't think there's anybody who knows me who would think that I'm modest, but I don't, you know, I probably don't do a good enough job of celebrating wins as I should. I just see so much work ahead and I'm excited to get to it that I don't really sit back and celebrate the positive times enough. But in the direction that we're going with the podcast, I would say that the thing that sticks out to me, and it's just such a small thing to most people probably, but it was my first ever iPod. And it just sounds so silly to say it now, but I remember, I don't know, I was probably 21 or 22 or something like that, back when iPods were pretty expensive. And I bought my first iPod with my own money. And the thing that made it special was that I sat back and I was like, I just spent $300 on this iPod. What bill am I not going to be able to pay so I can have an iPod? And I thought, you know, I'm good. I'm going to be able to pay all my bills. I can just go out and get myself something nice and not worry about it. And it was such a proud moment for me to have gotten to the point where I didn't feel like I was hurting myself or somebody else to do something nice for myself. And that's the kind of independence I think that I've been talking about. And it's just in little moments like that. I would say that that's probably it.
Well, and that does make a lot of sense, especially considering the story that you shared earlier with your family and, you know, not having Thanksgivings together and having to go without food. I mean, those are like considered basic needs. I mean, Thanksgiving isn't really a need, but it's something that is very typical for people to celebrate. And so to know that you don't have the funds for this holiday that revolves around, you know, basically a meal, you know, which then goes back to basic needs. So that, to have that be so far in your past, essentially, that you were able to spend money on something that you didn't need, that you just wanted, is huge. And to have that additional benefit of you spent the money on this thing that you didn't need, and you still had money to pay for those things
that you did need. You know, there's an anxiety that I think a lot of Americans understand. It's certainly gotten to be more popular, unfortunately, but there's an anxiety in poverty that it's really hard to fully comprehend unless you've had it. Mm-hmm. Just not knowing if you're going to eat, not knowing when you're going to get kicked out. And, you know, it's just so oppressive. And to have that feeling and then suddenly realize I kicked that feeling's butt through years of hard work and, you know, a lot of luck. It's just such a free, it's a lift, a weight lifted off your shoulders to know that you've kind of gotten there to some point. You know what I mean? So that was nice. I know it's a small thing. Obviously, I've got a lot of proud moments, but as far as something that I could share with CIS students, especially, would be concerned, that would be the thing.
Well, I think that it's also important to note that essentially that's like a sign of you breaking the cycle of poverty. And you did it at a relatively early age, because if you were only 21 or 22, you were not out of high school for very long and on your own independent before you were able to do that. So that's really impressive.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was a good feeling, and it's something that I want to make sure that, you know, my mission is that to give that feeling to other people, just even if it's brief, just having the exposure of a different paradigm is important. So I've been going around dropping off cartons of jackets to retail stores. And that's just to see a product. Well, first of all, to get a pallet full of product with your company's name on the side is a pretty awesome feeling. But to see your product hanging up next to other, you know, major successful brands in a store that's a pretty awesome feeling too. And I think that's another one of those, maybe that would be one of my proudest moments, but another one of those things, with the kids feel like they want to make something out of themselves. It's the small victories that make the biggest difference.
So. 'Cause I know.
Who thought I'd care so much about a box, right? I
never but it's not the box itself. It's what it symbolizes. Okay, so we are going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with a second serving of Letters from the Lunchroom. So stay tuned. So welcome back. As part of our show, we ask each guest to write a letter to the students that Communities and Schools serves. The only guideline they are given is that it must come from the heart. We also warn them that they will be asked to read their letter aloud during the podcast. Alex, are you ready to read your letter?
If you're ready, I'm ready.
Go for it.
Dear CIS student, I'm not going to pretend to know what you're going through, but I can tell you that I know how a lot of you feel. I grew up without my dad, not knowing when I was going to eat next, sometimes being homeless, and getting teased about being poor. I know how helpless and sad and frustrating and angry that can make a person. And I know that it's hard to live like that. I also now know that it's possible to grow beyond helpless and sad and frustrated and angry, and I'll try to share how I did it. So Victoria asked me to write a letter from the heart, but I'm not really a feelings kind of guy, so I'm going to write from the brain instead. If I met you and you asked me to tell you what I thought about while I was gaining my independence, this is what I would tell you. First, everyone poops. I know this sounds funny, but it's true. Every person who has ever walked on this planet has had to stop every day, take down their pants, sit on the throne, and take care of business. Now, everyone you know, everyone you see on TV, everybody you've ever walked by on the street, everyone poops. No one is better than anybody else. The rich and famous aren't better than you, and you're not better than anyone else. Everyone poops. Second, everyone says yes. Not to everything, and certainly not all the time, but everyone has something they will say yes to. I know one of the most frustrating things about being young, even though it never really changes, is hearing no all the time. You're not old enough. You don't have enough money. You didn't go to the right school. You're not cool enough. I get it. Just remember that someone out there will say yes. Your job is to find them. Third, everyone is a fraud. No one was ever born president or principal or CEO. It takes years to get to be in front of the camera or to gain a million followers on Instagram. It may seem like someone got famous overnight, but no one ever has. Don't think you can or will get to where you want to be quickly. It just doesn't happen. Life isn't short, it's long, and to get somewhere takes a lot of time and a lot of work. When you finally get to the point where you're not a fraud anymore, you'll know. Finally, if I could offer one solid piece of advice, it would be this. Find three mentors. No one has all the answers, but these people will help guide you. They could be mom or dad, but could also be an uncle, a grandma, the mayor of your town, your favorite musician, or someone who has achieved the success that you want for yourself. Don't limit yourself to who you ask. It can be anyone. Meet with them once a month and just catch up. Ask them for advice when you're stuck, and always make sure you tell them thank you and how much they mean to you. That's it. I know you can do this because I did it, and I poop too.
That was awesome. Trying to be quiet over here as you read your letter, but, you know, it's hard not to laugh. That I wasn't expecting, poop talk on today's podcast.
Yeah, I was wondering if that would be appropriate, but, you know, if I'm writing from the heart, I got to be me, and that's, you can ask anybody that knows me, that sounds like something I would say.
Yeah, no, I absolutely just want people to be 100% authentic, during the podcast. So that's perfectly appropriate. Wow. Yeah. You talked about some really, really cool things. I love that you brought up the mentors because we talked about them beforehand, and we actually just released a new blog, and Sherry Fonce, who, you know, she wrote this quarter's blog, and she talked about the importance of mentors, and she shared a personal story about somebody really important in her life. And so I do encourage people to go over to cismidamerica.org and check out that blog, because, you know, we talked earlier about the importance of relationships, and I'm hoping that people who listen to this podcast are sitting there in their cars or in their offices or at home, whatever, wherever they're listening to podcasts, and they can think of at least one person who has been that meaningful mentor or whatever you called them in their life, because it's so impactful. And so then if they do have that person, which I'm sure they do, that I would challenge them to go out and become that person for somebody else.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of kids and just people in general, a lot of people going in the cycle right now, they may not, you know, you feel helpless. So the last thing you want to do is ask for help. Mm-hmm. But you know, I'm a CEO. I work with a lot of other CEOs, and one of the things that all the smartest CEOs that I know do is they have peer mentors, just people they can bounce ideas off of. I've got five people. I've got a list of five people. This is not a joke. Who I call, who I know will tell me no. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a sales guy. I've been doing this for a long time. I've got a good idea and I think it's a great idea, and I'm going to sell you that it's a wonderful idea. And I have to keep people in my life who will tell me no, that it's a terrible idea, because it's all about relationships and you recognizing that, like I said, everyone poops, you know, everyone's different. Everyone's human. You'll make mistakes. Other people will make mistakes. And it's all about working together, you know, and finding people that understand you and are willing to give you yes answers and no answers and help you through things. And it doesn't matter how rich you are or how poor you are or what field you want to be in or anything. It's so important to surround yourself with people who are more successful than you, that can help work you through the really hard times. And especially if you're in a situation like I was growing up, those people are going to be invaluable. And, you know, they're going to end up being your family. Mm-hmm. And what a lot of kids need and who are, you know, suffering through issues, bullying issues or poverty issues or whatever it is, they just need somebody who understands. And that mentor should be that person. And if you can find three, that's great, because then you've got a whole wide pool of opinions that you get to choose from.
Mm-hmm. Well, and something else that you were talking about, it doesn't matter whether you're rich or not, is that, you know, even though nobody wants to be living in poverty, and in a perfect world, nobody would be living in poverty, in the end, success is not measured by the amount of money that you have. So I think that that's really important for kids to know as well, because their goal in life hopefully is not to, you know, become a millionaire.
That just breeds a lot of other problems that, exactly. You know, people, I know a lot of rich people and they'll complain about their lives just as much as the poor people I know. Mm-hmm. There's a sweet spot, you know, but it's not all about having all the money in the world, because that breeds a lot of problems that you don't understand yet.
Well, and even rich people need mentors.
Yep, it's true.
Yeah. So one of the things that I like to ask people is, whenever you read that letter aloud, what is it that you feel?
I just get so excited. You know, I love possibilities. I feel like if there's anything I could tell myself as a kid, which I have a feeling you might ask later, mm-hmm. I would say focus more, because there's so many possibilities and so many things that could happen. And I just get so excited about things, and beginnings. I'm a beginnings guy. I'm a founder, I guess, mm-hmm. You know, I just get so excited to think about these kids, and I know some of them, and you know what their futures could be. And, you know, I can think of all the things they should do and could do. And, I just get really jazzed up. So when I was reading and I was thinking about some of the kids that I know who are going to have bright futures, because I know they're going to work hard, and I'm just so excited for them, you know.
So are you a mentor?
It's probably back to the giving myself credit for things. Mm-hmm. I don't really see myself as a mentor, but I've got a lot of, you know, former players and former students and, you know, people I know that would probably say I'm a mentor. I just think that they're good people and I want to help out. So
I love that. So if you had to pick one, like, most important part of the letter for students that are listening to this podcast to take away, what would that be?
Well, not to drone on about it, but the mentor thing is huge. Yeah. You know, I'm a unusual guy from fairly unusual circumstances, and everybody's going to have their own perspective. So finding the mentor thing is, it's got to be more than one. It's important to have one, but I think it's really, truly important to have at least three. And they've got to be people above your pay grade, you know, people who you are aspiring to be. And I think it doesn't even necessarily have to be people that you know personally. You know, Gary Vaynerchuk is my mentor and I've never met him. I probably never will. But I just listen to his podcasts and read his books and try to pick up on his advice and then apply that advice. I mean, you can listen all day and not get anything done. But, you know, applying the advice that your mentors give you is going to be important too, because the reason they're mentors is because you want to emulate them. You want to end up like they ended up. So I think that's the thing. And there's a lot of, one of the things that attracts me to the CIS program so much is the in-classroom mentoring. But I think, you know, there are a lot of good nonprofit programs out there that focus on mentoring, and that is the way to change a person's life.
I'm really glad that you mentioned that whole thing about that mentors can be people that you don't even know personally. Because number one, I had honestly never thought about that, because all of my mentors have been people that I've known personally, but those are people that I define as mentors, where there are tons of people that I have, you know, researched what their lives are like. You know, did they go to school? What do they do for volunteering? And that sort of thing, where I'm just emulating them. You know, I like what they're doing and I want to, you know, help my life be on that same sort of pathway. But whenever I'm thinking about our students that are going through poverty, who may not have a lot of role models that are close to them, they can always just emulate people that they see that are further away, because there are ways to connect those people. They can read their books, they can listen to their podcasts, that sort of thing. I think that's an excellent idea.
Yeah. And then one of the reasons I like long form audio books instead of podcasts is because you get to dive a lot deeper into a subject, but also because that means I don't have to hold up my side of the conversation for hours at a time, which is awesome for me. It may not seem like it during the podcast, but I'm really not much of a talker.
Yeah. I mean, you're doing a great job.
Well, I appreciate that, but no, it's exactly right. Now, to counterbalance that, when you're reading somebody's podcast and books and you think they're the greatest thing on earth, and they probably are, you just have to keep in your mind that that person still poops and nobody's perfect. Everybody's got their problems. But you can respect somebody's opinion, disagree with them, and, you know, still hold them in high regard.
Well, and that's so true. And something that you just said, and then it automatically triggered this idea in my mind, was that essentially you you keep talking about basically keeping it real, you know, yeah. Everybody poops. Yes. And everybody goes through stuff. And even the people that are successful today may go home and be dealing with something tragic at home, or maybe came from a place that you never would have imagined they came from. I think that's really yeah. important to kind of look at that with an open mind and have that perspective on things. So I have a little story I'm going to throw in here. So I have a cousin who is becoming quite famous, and she's a country music singer. Her name is Kelsey Ballerini. And whenever we were growing up, I never, like, you know, I never thought she was going to become this person that would, you know, like be on People magazine and that sort of thing. And so, but I saw instead, you know, like her mother, which was my aunt, you know, and I saw, like, you know, her parents separate and some of the things that she went through whenever she was a kid and that sort of thing. And nobody would think, they would just think that Kelsey just like overnight blew up. And even though her fame has come pretty quickly, it's taken her like 10 years of hard work from the moment that she entered the country music scene back in, you know, whenever she was like 16 in Nashville to now she's in her mid 20s. So mm-hmm. it's just,
yeah, that kind of gets to my, that third point of everyone's a fraud. Yes. I mean, one of my favorite quotes is Lionel Messi says, you know, it took me 14 years and 176 days to become an overnight success.
Yes.
And it's true. You know, people don't realize the amount of work that it takes to get to be Melissa Martin, you know,
right.
the 11 years, the daily grind. There are a lot of really great days and there are a lot of really, really bad days, but there's more than anything else, a lot of medium days in between those. And, you know, it takes so long that by the time that somebody makes a name for themselves, you never think about the boring days sitting in a practice room on a field or whatever it is that you do, working hard to become better at something and then eventually for it to pay off. So,
but you
just
know,
don't give up. It takes a long time.
You're right. And but the thing that makes that time go by faster is if you can find something that you love and that you're passionate about.
Agreed.
Yeah. That's the thing that flipped the switch for me was once I found nonprofits and found that I had this passion and was able to put a big time, you know, a big bulk of my time into it. That's whenever everything kind of lit up. And once you're doing something that you love, it doesn't really matter a whole lot how much energy or time you're putting into it because
that's right.
you love it.
Yeah. I you know, I don't feel like I work all the time and I don't feel like I work a day in my life because
yeah.
I just love everything. If I don't love doing what I'm doing, I stop doing it.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, everyone lives a long time, but you certainly are still limited to the amount of time you have. And there's no reason to waste it doing something you hate. So
true. I feel like this podcast has been really heavy on the advice for students, but I hope that they listen and I hope that they take it because, just like
well, it's good advice for everybody, I think, including me. There are days I need to follow my own advice.
Same. Yeah. But I was gonna say, just like you, I have a story to tell. I'm going to share it someday on the podcast. But yeah, the passion, finding something you're passionate about and finding a mentor, gosh, that'll dig you out of some really deep holes. So, well, Alex, I want to say thank you for sharing your letter with us and sharing your story and letting us dig a little deeper into your past and your present. We're going to take another quick break and then we'll be back for some extra credit. All right, we are back. Are you ready, Alex, for some extra credit questions?
Well, I think so. And what I tried to do, I very nefariously tried to steal your thunder by asking the questions you'd asked before, hoping that I could be prepared for them this time. I'm a big prepare guy. So it'll be interesting to see what you have for me.
Well, I kind of did mix them up a little bit this time, but not too much. So you listened to Michael's then, I'm assuming?
I did, but unfortunately I didn't get to the part where he had his extra credit. So
oh, well, perfect. Then you are completely unprepared. I do my evil laugh. Okay. So are you ready then for your first extra credit question?
I'm ready.
Okay. What is one of your favorite parts about being on the CIS of Mid-America Board of Directors?
Oh gosh, this is easier and more difficult than I thought. So it would be really hard for me to narrow down a thing. We have an incredible board with incredible board members with a myriad of experiences, that all of which are incredibly deep and valuable. The staff is amazing. Of all the boards I've worked on, this is probably, if not the top staff, certainly close. The mission is incredible. The amount of possibilities we have in the future. I mean, this is such a great, incredible organization. It does an incredible work. It's beyond well run. I mean, there's no word for how well run this organization is. And it just makes me so proud to be part of the organization at all. Honestly, I feel a little bit like an imposter being on this board, because there are some really great people in this organization.
Well, yeah, but that does include you. So again, you're not giving yourself enough credit, but I'm sure Melissa will be really excited and just heartfelt, like I to hear what you said. So, so on the flip side, what is your least favorite part?
Well, I mean, nonprofits are still nonprofits. You know, money's tough. Money's tough for everyone. And, you know, I'm a startup guy. I'm an entrepreneur, I guess. And money's always tough. I think, you know, from the positive end, I think that the staff does a really good job of figuring that part out with the resources they have. But, you know, between not enough brand awareness with CIS, especially of Mid-America, and it always being a struggle to find resources, I would say one of those two things, depending on the day, would be my least favorite thing.
Yeah. So your final question is, if you could pick one superpower to have, what would you choose?
Oh, no way. So I was hoping that you would ask this question because of a conversation, part of the conversation we had earlier. You know, it's so hard to get people to open up about their true feelings, and everything is glossed over, and, you know, nobody wants to admit that they poop. Nobody ever wants to talk about what they say yes to, and nobody will ever admit what they don't know and how they're a fraud. And it just makes me so frustrated because I feel like I'm a pretty open guy. There's not really anything about my life that I wouldn't talk about. Nothing is coming to mind. So if I could have one superpower, my superpower would be thought bubbles. Mm-hmm. I would love to know what people are thinking all the time. And, you know, I'm a big nonverbal communication guy and micro expressions and stuff. So I still, even now without thought bubbles, try to figure it out. But if I had one superpower, I would love to be able to know what other people are thinking.
I love that. And so the next time that you and I are in the same physical space and we're like in a meeting together, make sure you glance over at me, because one thing that people have told me, and Sherry just told me this yesterday because we were in a meeting together in person, is that I am incredibly transparent. Like, I have no poker face at all. So yeah. If anybody says something, you will know instantly what my feelings are, because it'll be all over my body language.
Yeah, just imagine how much more we would get done as a society if we were all just honest and open with each other all the time.
I know. And I know that's so scary for some people, because I'm a big fan of being very honest and vulnerable. But at the same time, like, the word vulnerable is so terrifying for people. So I get it. But, yeah. You know, we just have to, you know, you be safe with people. You accept people. You don't judge them. You know, we'll get there eventually. And I think that people like you who are being honest about who they are and being very real, I think that really helps, because then people feel safe to be real about who they are.
Being that guy, being homeless, being hungry, you know, I've put myself in some very unusual experiences, and I've always tried everything. I will tell you, the first thing I ask when I'm confronted by a problem is, what's the worst that could happen? Mm-hmm. I mean, I've gone through all this and I'm 37, I'm still here. What's the worst that could happen? So I get why people are vulnerable, but believe me, I mean, if you think about the worst thing that could happen, it's probably not as bad as you think. And so if you CIS kids are listening, I know it seems scary, but believe me, if you ask yourself, what's the worst that could happen? It's probably not going to be that bad.
Yeah. And especially if you have a mentor there to help catch you if you fall.
Yep. Yep. Agreed.
All right, Alex, I want to thank you one more time for sharing your story with us and your time with us. It's been really awesome getting to know you better. Please make sure to check out Equinox and Solstice for more information on the Wear One, Share One program that we spoke about earlier in this episode. You will find them at equinox-solstice.com. For more information on communities and schools of Mid-America, please check out our website at cismidamerica.org and make sure to subscribe to this podcast and follow us on social media at CIS Mid-America. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Letters from the Lunchroom. I am your host, Victoria Partridge, and until next time, class is dismissed.